you are one of us. Your passion is the world of mountain biking, from enduro to gravel races and everything in between. This is Insider MTB, the podcast that takes you behind the handlebars, into the dirt, and behind the scenes of the mountain biking world. And now your host, Austin White.
All right, episode 19. Spencer's already hitting coffee. It's noon. Brought to you by Maxima Racing Oils. They got all your needs for mountain bike, road, gravel, e-bike, family, commuter. Have you tried SC1?
And dirt bikes. Absolutely. You're bike in a can?
Yes, you get
absolutely.
It.
Yeah, absolutely. You do a nice little wash. And then when you want that bike to shine a little nicer, hit the SC1 everywhere, but keep that stuff
right before
off
you put
the
it
brakes.
On Facebook Marketplace or what?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. I might even hit the brakes with that on when I'm selling it.
I wonder what the statistics are for how much SC1 has gone through marketplace upgrades, you know?
I mean, it must be big enough. They must sell enough because they made a beer on it. So
yes.
that'll also help the sales.
At Sea Otter, by the way, which we will get a lot of them there and give those Sea Otter SC1 beers to you, because I know that you're just a big lager
and
pale ale guy.
And air fresheners. The scent's pretty epic. It smells good.
It is. I'm with that.
If you know, you know.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm a big SC1 guy. I like SC1. So.
Let's go.
All right. We do have a guest for you today, and he's here in the waiting room, but we were going to get into some other stuff, but we'll save that for a little later. Let's add him on in. Oh, look at this guy. What's up? We're recording right now, so we're bringing you straight in. Yeah, that's how we
good
do it.
I wasn't thinking my nose.
We're loose program. Wow.
we're punctual though.
Oh, yeah. We're nothing. We're surviving, to be honest.
Loose but punctual. That might be a good hashtag to plug in. I'd be afraid to type that one in.
Absolutely.
I might put it on. I might just put it on. Dude, in the gym, wow.
Yeah.
You are serious about health.
I'm so serious. I'm more serious and more dialed than anyone.
I would hope so.
Yeah. I just took some pre-workout. Did my workout. I literally am still sweating. So if I'm a little juiced up right now, that's why. But here's the studio, man. I'm really stoked. It's coming together. This is actually the new addition, is this stretch mat, which is the coolest thing ever to warm up and cool down on. You can do like core work on it, and you never have to drag a pad anywhere because it's like firm enough to stand on, but it's soft enough for your elbows and knees to be comfortable. So
no more videos just out on some lonely road with your bike in the background.
Oh, I posted one this morning, but that was yesterday.
So that's done now that you got a stretch mat in this thing or what?
No, I like to switch it up. I'm actually, for the first time in a long time, since reels were a thing, I'm adding more variety to my content. It feels really good. I'm starting to find things that are successful that are different than just that one style of post. So, but with that said, those are like the banger, gotta do it. And I actually love it. Like doing a core workout outside and having a yoga mat, like in some random road with a scene, you know, it like doesn't make sense, but it looks great.
Do you drive to those or do you ride there with the yoga mat on the back? Like, just give me the details.
Okay. So most of those videos are filmed less than a mile from the studio. This location is incredible. So it's only a mile from Folsom Lake, which they host a lot of Nika races at. There's a lot of really good XC trails, and a lot of enduro guys go out there and play on the rocks because we have these huge granite slabs that are super fun to ride. Like you guys would have a blast out there on like a short travel bike. It's really fun, but
I want to hit the pause button real quick on this because not everyone's watching this. Most people are listening to this and maybe they recognize your voice. Maybe they don't even know who you are. So I just wanted to give you a little formal intro.
We're talking to
Derek Teal, AKA Dialed Health today. And, we're just gonna have a conversation with him and figure it out, which we were already diving into, but, Derek is the master of all fitness and bicycles. He rides everything. I've known him for a while through racing. I think we met at TDS we battled it out for a few years. Now he's not racing so much enduro, but he's done some insane things. Double Everest days, you name it. Derek's the man, and glad I could call him a friend. And he also has a podcast. I think it's just
and your teammate. You guys are specialized teammates. Yeah. Specialized Perfect. Teammates right here.
Yeah. Thanks for the kind intro, man. I appreciate it.
That's you, I think, unless I'm missing anything.
Yeah, seriously.
No, I mean, I think on the internet, that's about it. I'm a father of three. I have three little boys. Married man and a business owner. So those are like the three things that really occupy the majority of my time. And then all that kind of boils into what you see through Dialed Health. And yeah, it's just really cool, dude, because like Spencer, you were saying, I raced gravity mountain bikes forever. Like I grew up racing downhill, and that led me to nutritionists and coaches that were helping me out and more interest in that side of training. And so when I wasn't so sure about downhill racing anymore, that's what I pursued. And I didn't really intend on coming back into the sport, but as I became full-time as a trainer and I was just in the general fitness industry working at a global gym, the enduros really started popping up, and this was like 2014, 2015. And I felt like I had so much unfinished business with downhill racing that I was like, man, I feel like I need to like get in this, do a couple years, really see what I have and kind of get some closure, if anything. But I set myself this like 2-year timeline of like, all right, I've been riding long enough to where if I pursue this for a couple years, like barring any crazy injury, if this is going to be a career for me, 2 years is enough time to make that happen. If it's not going to happen in that time frame, and this was just something I had set myself, but
that's a pretty high standard of 2 years. Like that's you got it. And I mean, I think it takes years for most people, right?
I know, but I was racing pro downhill, and I was successful. Like I was riding for Yeti National Team. I wasn't winning pro like national level races. But I was like top 10 competing. Like I wasn't, I had a lot of gravity experience. And then my fitness had come along a lot in that time I was in the general fitness industry. And so when I got into enduro, I got up to speed really quick. And like Spencer said, you know, within a year or two, I was really duking it out for, I was on a lot of podiums at like Calendero races and West Coast Series races. I'd win the occasional stage, and I was competitive nationally, but I wasn't really doing anything that was like, all right, EWS contract, here you go. And so 2016, I got married, and that was kind of like the time frame where I was like, all right, I was like, I'm going all in on Dialed Health. And because of that experience racing enduro, I'm hanging out with Spencer and Marco Osborne and like world level guys and kind of just brushing shoulders with dudes. And we're talking training a little bit because people know I'm a full-time trainer. And that's when I realized, I was like, man, not everyone knows what to do in the gym. And there's like a real need for a program specifically for them. So the first online program I came out with at the time was the off-season enduro program. And it was just this like PDF that I sold. And that was the first time I was like, wow, I could really expand my business outside the walls of the gym, training people in person, and go online. And so it became a subscription when I realized, I was like, well, I could charge less and give people more if they could commit to a monthly subscription. And so it was this balancing act. And then that led into COVID. It led into like having kids, like all this crazy stuff. I'm moving away from enduro and spending a lot more time on my road bike and starting to get way more into endurance and that side of the sport. And so that's kind of how it's evolved to what it is today, which is kind of crazy.
So digging into, okay, you were a full-time trainer then when you were racing, or like what?
Yeah.
And that took up, that's what was paying the bills then.
Oh yeah. Probably. And it's, yeah.
Okay. So then it was an easy solution in a sense, right? Like I know how to ride, I'm good, but I also know how to train. Cause I would say most cyclists don't come that path, right? They like are just trying to find training on the other side, right? To level. And I think that guys that race like XC or maybe more endurance, it doesn't matter as much, but an enduro guy or a downhill guy, understanding lifting weights and all that stuff.
I think you're talking to the guy that will argue that through because he's taken the gravity focus and pushed it into the endurance format and how endurance athletes can benefit almost more from having some sort of a gym regimen, because those mostly on average, you see the XC guys being super lean, not having a lot of muscle mass and which is fine. But then now I feel like with today's day and age, you see got a lot of guys like Keegan, for instance, and Blevins, like they're having full gym workouts and regimens for added strength and durability and obviously safety for if they hit the ground and stuff. And I mean, Derek obviously can talk more on that, but tell us. I think it's just as important.
Yeah, I do agree. I was going to push back on that because
damn it.
The thing is though, it's like a scale. The higher volume your endurance is, truthfully, the less that you're going to want to do in the gym. There is a cutoff though. Wholeheartedly, 2 days a week of total body strength is that minimum that you should, that line that you shouldn't really cross. When you're doing less than that, you know, scientifically maintenance could be 1 day a week, but it's a very slippery slope when you commit to 1 day a week to try to maintain, because you miss a session and it's just like this slow, slow decline unless you're doing 2 days. But
you're talking about my gym regimen right now for sure.
Yeah. So like even a world tour level road racer should do 2 days at least of activation work, which is very light strength training work. And that makes it, that ensures that they're going to fight any muscle compensations that come up and like overuse injuries and like feeling more comfortable on the bike. There's all these benefits of strength training besides just raw strength. But then you go on the flip side where it's like, okay, if you're racing World Cup downhill, you're not doing crazy high volume of endurance. You're doing some for sure, but you also need to be crazy strong. Like you need to be like stronger than your bike almost. Like you need to be able to push into compressions so hard that you're like worried about your like tires ripping off your rim, or you should be able to handle that kind of a impact. And so your ability to lift heavy even like 3 days a week is totally realistic, because it's not combating like all this high volume and fatigue that you're getting from, you know, a 6 hour gravel ride or something like that. And I understand like what a 10K day feels like of like vert on the enduro bike. Like it's hard. You're out for a long time, but all the stop and go, it's just such a different stimulus than like sitting on your seat and pedaling for that long. And so if you see it like a scale, it's like everybody needs it. People who don't even ride need it, but like everybody needs to strength train. And the more endurance that you do, the less intensity and less like volume that you'll do strength training and frequency. But then the more like you're on the gravity side, the more intensity you can do in the gym and the more you really need that, if that makes sense. It's like, it really is this big scale.
So and then, by intensity, he means like lifting heavy and like really pushing your limits in the gym. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong there, but
yeah,
but for the most like part. Most of the endurance guys, I mean, sure, they can lift heavy. I feel like mostly they're going to be lifting heavier in the off season, and then while they're in season maintaining and stuff, they're just doing lower weight with a lot more reps just for like muscle endurance. Because if like a Tour de France guy puts on a bunch of muscle mass, that can be somewhat detrimental to his muscle endurance, just because they need to move so much more.
To be honest, they'll lower the weight and keep the reps pretty similar. Like it really goes to maintenance mode, because there's a point where if you increase the reps high enough, now you're in this muscular endurance category, and there can be a lot of fatigue from that. And it's not as maybe isolated on a muscle group, especially if you're doing compound movements that use multiple muscle groups, but it's like that general fatigue that you get almost from riding a lot. You can start getting that from your strength training workout. Like in an extreme version of that would be looking at like a HYROX workout, if you guys are familiar with HYROX, or like CrossFit, where even some CrossFit workouts don't require a lot of weight, but it requires like a lot of reps, little bit of like not that much recovery time, and that can burn you out almost the same way. So it's like the intensity needs to come down, and the reps need to come down for everything to kind of like stabilize. And I think the big thing right now on the endurance side is that less coaches are arguing whether or not it's beneficial to strength train. Most coaches seem to agree on it, but what they're trying to figure out is how to do it right now. Like that's the big question. And that's what's been so interesting to watch. Cause I feel like I was just trying to convince people 5 years ago And now it's like, I don't have to convince people. I just have to tell them not to do these like crazy things some coaches are suggesting.
Yeah. But I feel like, so then that's, I personally think Enduro is the best because it kind of hits the avenue of all of it, right?
Yeah.
You have to be a pretty insane athlete to be really good at Enduro. You know, just the fast, sit around for 20, 30 minutes and then just got to go. And you got to do, who knows, a 10 minute stage, maybe, you know, stuff like that. And
yeah,
be able to lift weights like a downhill guy, but also last like a road day, you know, a gravel guy in a sense, right?
Kind, you know, it's weird. I don't want to discredit any of the physicality behind Enduro because I know that who's the current EDR world champ?
Oh man, I just did.
It's sad that we wouldn't even know.
Is it Alex
Rideau?
Rideau? Yeah.
I think so.
Or is he 20? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I know that he uses Trainer Road, which is an on-the-bike training product, and he's very tuned in with his on-the-bike training. He puts in serious volume, and the way he approaches his training, I think, is like top tier, just like listening to how he looks at fatigue from certain areas and how it relates to an enduro day. So there's guys that are training really well like that, but I know for a fact most of them aren't either. And what's funny is that, not to say that everyone's training bad, but like a 6 hour gravel ride is so different than like a 8 hour enduro trail ride. And it really has to do with that consistent pressure on the pedals. Even with the intensity, like rising and falling with enduro, you're out for a long time. There's so much start and stop. You're using so many different muscle groups that it's still fatiguing, but it is very different. Feeling at least. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Cause I feel similar, motocross is probably similar to that, right? Where you just sit around, go to the starting gate, and then you just got to turn it on and then go and be strong. Right.
Not exactly though. They're not just sitting on their ass doing nothing. They're definitely putting some sort of a warm up in.
Yeah.
You know, who'd be good to chat with about that is John Wessling. If you guys are homies, which I think, as you are, Spencer, he would know that really well. He also is really familiar with Nordic skiing, which I almost want to say that would be more comparable because it's like total body, heart rate spikes through the roof, and you're just redlined for 20 minutes or whatever it is. I think most Nordic skiing events are longer. I don't know anything about that sport, but like to my understanding with moto, you get pretty much pegged from the start and you just ride it for the whole event.
Yeah.
You know,
I guess enduro, you can kind of breathe for a minute and then get back in it. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, then, I mean, so then now that you've now flavored over all of these ones, which one's like your more favorite to train a person for, or, you know, gets you more excited?
I actually haven't really thought about that, to be honest, because dude, it's rewarding to get anyone to progress and to be stoked on their training. Like I've trained people in my gym who are 350 pounds who didn't even think that they could strength train because they were so heavy. And I get them doing a strength training circuit, and the satisfaction that they have from that is as rewarding as like Lance Haidt just winning the Rock Cobbler, gnarly gravel race. And it's like, it's the same type of feeling I get. So I haven't really put in much thought of like what I love the most. I know that personally, like I'm really into drop bar stuff right now, road and gravel. But I'm also working with some XC athletes like Sevilla Blanc right now, who is one of our top Americans, one of the top XC racers on the World Cup. And seeing the strength progression and her excitement behind how her body feels right now is so cool. So yeah, it's hard to say though, but if I had the opportunity to strength train Tadej Pogačar, like, and he was stoked on what we're, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like,
he's listening to this podcast, so maybe he will call you up after this. You know,
Tade, I'm ready, dude. I'm ready.
Get him on Instagram right now.
Yeah. But you know, what's funny too, is like, I think one thing that's kind of interesting, even though I don't really ride gravity, I don't even have an enduro bike right now. I basically take my XC bikes and I ride all the enduro trails I used to.
I mean, and, XC bikes are so good now. From 2014 or to 16 when you were doing it, those are what the XC bikes are now.
Yeah, like the Geo is probably pretty comparable, dude.
Yeah.
Like my Epic 8 at speed is so stable. It's kind of like sketchy because we have trails that are really high speed, and then you'll come into like a tight rock section, and like you'll come in forgetting that you're on an XC bike sometimes, you know.
Are you running a pretty stock bike? Pretty stock.
Super stock. Actually, yeah. That's the problem with my bike right now is that I don't have trail bike brakes on it. Yeah. Like I can't ride XC brakes. They're horrible.
Yeah.
I need like I saw someone put Mavens on their Epic 8. I honestly want to.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, but that bike is capable enough to use those, if that makes sense.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I mean,
the Epic 8 Evo that I ride comes stock with codes on it.
Codes would be enough for sure.
And they, I mean, good? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that bike. I raced downhill on it at Sea Otter Enduro.
Spencer would race a Huffy. He's fucking just that.
No,
that's true.
But what I'm saying is like, yeah, the modern XC plus bike
is a 2014 Enduro bike, pretty much.
Yeah,
right?
Almost. I mean, the Downeyville like model bike, which is an XC, I call it XC plus, like cross country with a little more down country, is like so capable. You can ride 90% of trails without even questioning. And yeah, I spend most of my time on either my Epic or my Stumpy, and Stumpy can be overkill.
Oh, for sure. Well, what's funny is like Keegan set up for Downeyville last year that he won. I think Blevins won the DH, but
I don't think Blevins went last year.
2 years
was it the year before?
2 years ago. It was 2 years ago. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was a pretty XC setup. Like, these are just so, like,
on fast tracks.
Dude, yes. And so that's a thing, too, I've noticed coming from Enduro into the endurance sports. Like, there's definitely guys, like, when you're at a gravel race, it's really funny. So a gravel race like BWR, for example, where you're on road for like 20 miles, and then you'll get on like a single track mountain bike trail for 5 miles, you can tell who's the mountain biker who came into gravel versus who's the roadie who came into gravel. And the way things like split and come back together, it's like hilarious, because you'll come into single track, and then all of a sudden these dudes are off, like crashing, going crazy slow. And you'll pass these dudes, and that's just because of my background and like other like if you see a guy take a corner with a foot off on a gravel bike, you're like, oh, this guy is for sure from Enduro or something. Yeah, but then you and that guy will link up, and you get back on the road, and that wave of roadies just comes in like a freaking freight train behind you again, and you just like try to jump on the wheel and hang on for as long as you can. It's really interesting, but there's these outliers. Like Keegan's really, really good at technical stuff, but like, dude, when you ride with like Blevins or like Lance Hayden or some of these, I've heard about, like even like Victor Koretsky, and I've heard about some of these dudes. I haven't ridden with them, but like
Nino,
dude, their ability to handle a bike is like, I wonder. I'm like, I don't think a top World Cup downhill racer could get on an XC bike and keep up with them for as long. Like, I don't know, because the bike position's so different. It would take a while for them to get used to it. But these guys are so freaking good.
Didn't like Nino ride PG in Laguna without a dropper seat post?
Yeah. Have you ever heard the story, Derek? No. There's a trail called PGs in Laguna, which is it's steep, super technical trail with like a couple rock slabs. One with like a very steep rock slab into a hard
it's
left.
It's the one that you always see in the video, the dude just dying off the edge of the
cliff. Going off the edge of a cliff. Yeah. It's sketchy. And Brian Lopes and Hans Rey, both incredible bike riders, bet Nino Schurter $1,000 apiece that he couldn't ride this trail high posting, which means no drop post for those who don't know. And he did it. And there is no shot in hell I would ever even attempt this trail with a seat post all the way up my butt, man. Like,
dude, if you're saying that, means
it's
something.
Incredible, which means like they know how to handle themselves, to say the least. And
XC has changed that way, though. And the courses have evolved that way. Why those type of riders and Blevins. I mean, I feel like Blevins is way more technically advanced on a bike than probably strength of like a Keegan, if that makes sense, or like the endurance level, or I don't know how to say that the best.
That's a good question. I don't know how strong Blevins is. I actually don't really know how like his like raw physical capabilities, but yeah, that dude can rip. Like if you've seen him on a pump track on his XC bike,
it's crazy.
So sick.
And not only that, but like, I mean, I'd have to assume he's running like an 80 mil stem on his XC bike. Like even I run an 80 mil stem now, but like manualing with a long stem is like, it's a lot of torque on your low back. Like, these things are hard, and this dude makes it look so easy. It is just really sick. Yeah.
All the years of racing BMX and stuff pay off nicely. Yeah. Cause yeah, I mean, and it's cool. It's cool to see. I mean, with all due respect to a lot of people that I raced with growing up and stuff, like, you would rarely see that at the XC local XC races and stuff. I was the weird one, the one that could drop everyone on the descent, and then everyone slowly reels me back in the climbs, and then I drop them, and that was how I raced. Now, most people can, like, all the guys that have had success in the U.S., they all can handle a bike insanely well. There's at Sea Otter this year, I raced the cross country race, and we were filming a video, and I had GoPro footage of me getting caught by this guy on a climb, and he's definitely more fit than I am or was, and so he caught me. And right before we're about to drop this descent, I'm like, I know you just caught me. Can I please go in front of you? Like, and he raced me to the single track, and he was stronger. He's more powerful than I, well, in that, after a climb, he had more in the tank. So he beat me to the single track, and he was so gung-ho on being in front of me. And then I'm sitting there, and my GoPro's recording, and I'm just talking to him. I'm like, all right, man. Let's keep this rolling. Let go of the brakes. Turn with your hips. Like, I'm coaching him down this thing because it's in between, like, sagebrush and manzanita, so it's narrow. There's no room to pass. And then finally I just lost my patience and just kind of hopped off the trail, kind of cut it and cut in front of him, because I'm losing time when I'm stuck behind somebody where they're gaining all the time right back on the climb. And sure enough, bottom of the descent, couple minutes later, here he comes, and I'm like, all right, man, now's your turn, I'm letting you go.
But I can't imagine something more annoying than, like, someone you pass coaching you on the descent when you're, like, trying really hard.
Dude, he was pissed by, like, the third time you did it to him, and he was like, just go this time. Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
dude, that project was rad though. That was really cool. I can't believe you pulled that off.
Well, I can't believe he didn't die.
It was good. I'm not, like, over the moon about it. We could have done better. Given some circumstances, it kind of changed right before we filmed it. I had been training really well and had been riding really well and was super cross country fit, which I think was the most important for me. Cause I had the power and I needed just the overall endurance right when I, about a month before I tried out for a stunt show, and I stopped riding as much and just spent all my time on a jet ski, and I lost so much fitness. So that hindered my cross country race and result. And then straight into the downhill race, I was just too smoked to even race. So I don't know. We might swing for it again in a couple of years.
Months. You can swing for it in 2 months. No, you can go for this again. Derek, get him a program. Let's fucking do this shit.
Dude. That's all I need. 2 months. 2 months. You know.
Oh, wow. RIP, buddy. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about your recent accident?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Why do you want to ride a road bike after that? I'm so, like, you're crazy.
I think because it was such a freak scenario. I mean, I know people get hit by cars, you know, it was just so extreme the way that it happened that my honest thought is that the chances of it happening twice are even less.
You're crazy.
Struck by lightning.
Wow.
Yeah, it is. Like, I mean, what's funny though too, is that although the person that hit me, you know, was definitely at fault, like, part of the reason it happened was because he was going so fast and it was so unexpected that I just thought this car was slowing down, but they were doing 60 miles an hour and did not slow down, period, and just blew right through the stop sign. But I also rode through the stop sign. Like, I'm on a country 4-lane stop, country road, and I was going to make a left turn. So I checked up with speed. And when I saw the car coming, I'm like, okay, cool. Car coming from the left. They have a stop sign. They're going to be slowing down. I look straight. I look right. Check up speed a little bit. you know, probably rolling through at 10 miles an hour. And literally by the time I look back to the left, I'm getting creamed. And so it was like the situation that made me realize that I can never assume a car is going to do what they're supposed to do. And I also have to go out with more patience. Like I really never rode patiently on the road bike. And I think that's like the first thing that you need to do, because you want to do intervals and efforts and these Strava like segments that go through intersections, and you just want to ride. But the reality is you're sharing the roads with things that could kill you very easily. And so,
and people that care a lot less about you than they should.
Yeah. And people that intentionally go out of their way to actually scare you or hurt you.
Was that this type of situation?
No, I don't think so. I really don't think that he was hoping to hit a cyclist. To be honest, like even the way it came, there was like a fence. I don't think he saw me. I don't think he was paying attention, to be honest.
He was on your Instagram probably at Dialed Health. You just posted something. He was working on a new program.
Could you imagine that? Talk about irony. Talk about irony.
He's like rushing to the trailhead to do a cool workout.
Yeah.
He knew that spot.
I know. Oh, I wish that. It was crazy, man. It was very bad.
I guess so. You're just looking at it as like, I can't get struck by lightning twice. And
I just see that, you know, I also can be safer. I ride with radar now. I ride more patiently. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like the amount of little dogs I've bunny hopped on bike trails because I don't want to slow down is a lot. And like skimming through people and just like rushing like that is like, and it's funny too, as a dad now who I take my kid on their Strider bikes, like on bike trails, when people are moving that fast, it is one of the most annoying things. And I actually have this weird trigger right now with bad drivers and people who drive fast through parking lots or blow stop signs. Like it's this, I'm working on it. I've been doing a lot of therapy. I've done some trauma therapy. It's been very helpful. But
as you should have, I have kids and I'm like, dude, why are you going through my neighborhood 50 right now?
That makes me so unbelievably mad. It's insane. Oh,
I want to kill him.
You can't, I mean, obviously you're learning and you're adjusting to life after this and how it's kind of obviously physically hurt you, but mentally and emotionally as well. But I feel like we're all there. We all are guilty of looking around at a stop sign and being like, ghost is clear, we're good, expecting
traffic
to stop or at a red light and or a stop sign wherever. I mean, I run almost every stop sign there is, pretty much. Like
I was honest about that from the beginning, like even in court, you know. To the sentencing for this guy. What's up?
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I didn't get a concussion, so I felt everything. Oh. And I like, that's where a lot of the trauma comes from, is that, you know, I was like holding my pelvis in my hand, you know, and like literally bleeding to death,
right?
On the road.
And going through all that, right? Yeah, it's like sitting there and think all those thoughts and you go through it. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Not saying that I've had that bad, but I've had some pretty good injuries or held people who've snapped their whole arm and the bone and everything sitting there. And you're just like, I don't know about this. But
Yeah, it was like super extreme. I broke my femur. It was like a bad femur break. Tibia. It was an open pelvis fracture, like shattered my ilium. So like the iliac crest, and torn colon, collapsed lung. I broke my helmet in two places. I think I blacked out when the car hit me because I like spun so fast. Like I cartwheeled in the air so fast. It was a small car, thankfully. And like right before impact, the only like reaction I had was to jump. Like I just remember like a cat, dude. I like pushed off my handlebars, pushed through my pedals as hard as I could to just jump up. And my hip hit the top corner of the windshield. And so that's what shattered my pelvis. And then my femur break was from my leg hitting the hood. When I got hit, I just spun this cartwheel that was like, I just remember flying up in the air, spinning really fast. And then I remember like hitting the ground. And then from there, it was just trying to crawl out of the road so another car didn't hit me, which was like the craziest pain. Because when I rolled over, like the way my femur rolled and the bone break, it was so bad. So thankfully people showed up and helped me out. I'm like convinced this angel was there, dude. There's this lady, we can't find her. And oh, she's really? The one who took her sweatshirt off and stuffed it in my pelvis, essentially, to stop the bleeding, because there's like life-threatening blood loss. And so, yeah, it was a long ambulance ride to the ICU, and then I was in surgery for 2 days. So I was under anesthesia and basically out of it for a few days. And then I woke up. So it was like really, really wild, man. But being awake for that long in the ambulance, like wondering if you'll ever see your kids again or if they'll
grow
up.
Did they have you stable before they transported you, or there wasn't like life flight level, or they had to have stabilized you if you were bleeding that much, right? Before.
Yeah, I'm assuming. I mean, I was like fully in shock, but I just remember like asking for painkillers the whole time and they wouldn't give them to me. And
probably lost too much blood too, right? That they would.
I don't know. I never found out why. I just remember asking and they kept saying no. And then I saw my wife right before I went into surgery. So yeah, it was gnarly. It was 1 year ago, and it was just crazy to be in a situation where you don't even care if you can ever ride a bike again.
Yeah.
Like you don't even think about that. You just want to be alive and be there for your kids and your family. And I think that's like been what has sparked this whole year. I've really, coming out of the injury, I kind of approached it like I had everything up until that point, which is like fix it by doing more, working harder, being more organized, waking up earlier, not making excuses, pushing yourself more, just like more. And I did that for like 8 months coming out of this injury. Like I set goals that were so high that it created this insane amount of unnecessary stress to the point where I literally flew to Switzerland to do this huge fondo, and I still have an open wound and I'm changing band-aids in the bathroom on the flight over because the screws in my pelvis are rubbing a hole through my skin. Like I had an open wound for 11 months. And so like I'm doing that and I'm going overseas to do a 100-mile like Swiss Alps fondo. Like how stupid is that? And it took that for me to realize that I was doing too much and to feel confident that I guess I was working hard or something, but it was like the first time it gave me permission to back off and really recalibrate and see things for what they were. And although I was doing a lot of things well before the accident and I wanted so desperately to just get back to that, I think there were these obvious areas that needed correction that I wasn't able to get there until I had this experience. So really, for the first 8 months, it was just this like horrible, stressful, like tormenting time. And really, it was about, I think, like October, I started coming around and feeling like giving myself permission to like take a step back and to be smarter and to not have these crazy expectations. To be honest, like, to put it in God's hands and be like, I trust your timeline more than me trying to create this timeline.
Yeah.
And that was the number one thing where I had to just like, it was crazy, but I realized how much I was just death gripping this situation. And I just had to be like, okay, like God, this is out of my control. And I've tried so hard to control it, but I literally can't. I'm going crazy. Like I was actually like going crazy. So I think that was that moment. It was like, oh my gosh, like I don't have to do this, you know, my way. Like I can let God work. And it's crazy. Since then, like all those things that were tormenting me about productivity, work, my own capabilities, physically, business, like all these things have, it's been like, I've been chipping away at it for a while, but could not be more stoked about where I'm at now. Just over a year later, like I feel more at peace than I felt like probably since I had my first kid like 5 years ago.
Wow. And that, dude, I mean, that's incredible. I'm very stoked for you and stoked to hear that. And I think that that innate desire to kind of make up for lost time that you had, from what it sounds like, is one of the biggest problems with our society, with American society and culture right now, is that everything and part of that problem, I think, comes from social media and how we're doing things, and how we all have this societal pressure to be always grinding and on it and working towards something with these big old goals. I think that to some extent it was supernatural for you to go into that mode, and I mean, if something happens and I am forced to take a week off, I come back like, oh, I got to go twice as hard this week. And in reality, I mean, it shouldn't be like that. There's so much more to life and so much more things that are important to than having a successful business or whatever, or getting more social followers or reaching your community. Like, those people can wait. The most important thing in your life is family and your kids. Obviously, I don't know this because I don't have any kids and I don't have any responsibility that like that. About. I'm pretty confident we've been over this. I genuinely am stoked and very excited for you to have kind of come out of that and found what is happy and what's working for you and what God has in store for you. I mean, if it's meant to be, it'll be. And I feel like there's so much out there that forces you to look 10 steps down the road. But in reality, the only step that matters is the one that's right in front of you. You 10 steps down the road could be the goal and could be the direction you want to go, but there's could be on the second step something that forces you to go to the right and have to change direction in order to still get to that 10. So I don't know. I'm stoked for you.
Well,
that was cool. That's... and super cool to just kind of hear, and thanks for being pretty vulnerable. I don't know how much you've talked about this and stuff, but stoked you're good. Happy.
No, thanks. I actually have talked about it quite a bit. So it's crazy. The 6 weeks after this happened, I went to the ER with a bad infection in my surgical wound, which was pretty likely because of how messy of a fracture it was, and just laying on the open road with all this junk for a while. But it was not good. Ended up having to get like a wound vacuum, and I'm on antibiotics for it was like almost 20 days. It was just like crazy. And I had this like hole that had kind of like, it was like a canal of like tunneled pus blood. It was disgusting. Anyways, the next day I'm on a podcast, Ted King from the gravel road scene. Amazing dude.
Yeah.
To talk
World
about the
rider. He's very accomplished.
Talk about the whole thing in detail. And it's the most intense visual if you want to go there. And it's crazy because I don't regret doing it. I'll never listen to it, but I did it because I had never experienced fear like I was at that time. And that was without a doubt the pinnacle of the fear, because I had just gotten through this thing like a month deep. And I still can't even like move the left side of my body, because like all the injuries were connected from literally below my knee all the way up to my chest, because to fix my torn colon, I had to do X-lap surgery. So they literally went through the front of my stomach, pulled open my abs. So like from my core, my pelvis, glute, leg, I couldn't use any of that. And that's, it's just always funny how people will compare injuries. They're like, well, I broke a femur. And I'm like, dude, I broke everything around my femur too. Like the muscles in your hip are control your leg. So I couldn't move for a long time. And
had you had broken anything before this pretty good or
oh no? Yeah. Like, okay. See, that's the thing too. Like I've had a full ACL reconstruction, so collarbone, arms, wrist, concussions, like rotator cuffs, the whole thing. And that's from all the downhill racing and dirt jumping. Yeah. And so basically sorry, that was kind of a rant, but I never experienced a complication either. So I've always, like, I've had those injuries, but I've always, like, gotten better on a pretty linear curve, I guess.
Yeah.
So to have such...
You're going to be fine type of thing, right? Not this.
Yeah. Or even with the ACL, it's like, okay, it's going to take 4 months, but then you'll be pedaling and you'll just use a brace. And it's like, I never had to go back to the ER because, like, I had this hole in my leg. Like, you know, so I think that added this layer of fear where I was like, what's going to happen now? Like, next. Because, like, now I feel like I'm never going to get better. And it's going to be one thing after another. And then the next thing was the fact that this wound wouldn't close for like 11 months because the screw was rubbing on the inside of the skin. It's like in that exact spot where you hinge and it's just constant friction. And so it created this hypergranulated tissue. It's really disgusting, but it actually got fixed from a cortisone shot. So I'm hoping that lasts. If it doesn't, I'll have to get the screws out. But anyways, that's been a huge victory like the last month. But going back to that podcast, I recorded it at like the peak of fear. And dude, I let it out on this podcast, like cried the whole time in detail, talking about like everything that went through my head step by step. And so I did it because I wanted people who have been through an experience like that to not relive their own experience, but to feel validated for what they're going through. Because before that, dude, 6 weeks before I recorded that podcast, I was feeling myself to the top degree, like more than I ever have in my life. Most success I've ever had in my life was the January before this happened. It happened January 30th. And like that January, financially, business, opportunities, family, everything was like on fire. And what's funny at the time is I would have told you that like my pride wasn't getting in the way, or that I was humble or wasn't like very arrogant about it. But looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's not like I was that repelling outwardly, but inwardly, like the things I was thinking about myself is just like not good. Like, and that's what has been nice moving forward, is just catching these things, because I was starting to make bad business decisions because I was like inflating my personal ego. And it's like I was starting to do things that weren't good for my customers, but they were good for me. And like, because everything is so connected, it just was more harm than good. And so there's a lot of stuff like that this year too that I've reeled in as well, where I'm going to do this thing I've done for 5 years, but I realize I'm like, oh, I'm not really doing this for anybody except for me. And it's taking time and focus and energy away from my product and my customers. So I actually should stop doing this thing. And it's crazy how much I'm chipping away at stuff like that right now. It's a very humbling process. And then also too, to just go through this injury and never know if you're really going to be able to get your strength and fitness back and all that. It's just crazy, man. Yeah. So, but it's going well. Sorry for that rant.
No, but I mean, it's almost like when you're on, I don't want to say deathbed, but I guess it is kind of deathbed level stuff.
Yeah.
You kind of get a change of focus of understanding your life, right?
Well, I definitely have. I think I'm noticing that now. And a lot, I mean, the majority of it has been from my faith and the support group I've had, like my immediate, having such a strong family, being connected to my church and having these positive influences that are there for me every time I need it. And it's been good because I can see now that one experience could literally, like, you could have one bad thing happen to you, and you could base every decision for the rest of your life based off of the fear that was created from that.
Yeah, no doubt.
And it could be the stuff that's completely unrelated, but you have this internal like compass that's now guiding you based off of fear. And it's actually illogical. And it's taken me a long time to believe that. And I still catch myself in these really bad like thought patterns, assuming the worst is going to happen, or feeling like all these things are going to be taken away from me because another thing's going to happen bad or whatever. But that is one of those things I've learned from that moment, is like, you could have some any type of trauma, whether it's physical or emotional or both. And if you really don't start addressing it, it could literally guide the rest of your life in a negative way. And I think that's what's so scary, that I never understood that before, because I had built a business, gone through COVID, had twins, had like hard things in my head that I was like, okay, this is the hardest thing I've ever been through. You know, there's loans and financial like pressure, and there's legit things, like I'm a legit adult providing for a family with a business with high risk and yada, yada, yada. But I had never had that level of fear, like that was inserted off that thing that happened, you know? So, going back to why, like, have I talked about this a lot? I have. And it's cool now to be able to talk about it more with feeling like I actually have learned from it and gotten stronger, at least mentally, because that's what you would hope. You'd hope that you would go through something like this and actually come out stronger on the other side. And I can see that starting to happen. And what's funny is that all the strength is coming from backing off and addressing the fear. But it's like the opposite of just how I've ever done anything.
That's interesting though. I mean, I feel like it's super admirable, because I feel like the easy route is to just kind of fall into that fear and live like that. And I feel like there's a lot of people that do that. It takes them a lot longer than a year to have the switch flip to be like, all right, where can I find positivity in this? And I think, yeah, it shows a lot about your character and who you are to like be able to be introspective on the situation and how it can be seen in some sort of a positive light. I mean, obviously it's a horrific incident and it changed your life, and would all people be like, yeah, I wish that never happened to you? Yeah, 100%. Everyone would probably say that, but it's crazy how things work and things play out in into a positive way. I think part of your character was shown too with how you've been able to communicate and reach out and kind of hang out and touch people in positive ways. And it was shown in the fact that I have seen a lot of injuries, and I saw a lot of people that have gotten support and stuff, but man, a lot of people came out of the woodwork to show their love for you. And I think that was pretty cool, man. It was cool to see. And when I read the first Instagram post that I think your wife put out, I was like, whoa, like I saw some things and it was crazy. And it was cool to see how everyone kind of came together and really care about you, man.
I'm happy you brought that up, dude. The fundraiser that happened for me 2 weeks after the accident was one of the most overwhelmingly cool things ever. Yeah. And I think as a bike rider who's been in different parts of the industry, like we discussed, you know, I came up from downhill, was an enduro and kind of dabbled in XC and spent a lot of time road, gravel, all that. Everybody came out to support. Yeah. I mean, I had family friends that had nothing to do with bikes. There was hundreds of people there just to do the enduro group ride. Guys coming from all over the place. There was a gravel ride. There was a road ride. There was all this community. It was like everybody I've interacted with in the last like 10 plus years came together to support at one time. It was so cool. Dude, it happened in this parking lot right behind me. It was insanely special, and also extremely helpful too. Like I want to make sure I talk about this in the right way, but everyone there raised a lot of money for me, and I'm bringing it up to thank them, and I already have, but that was another thing I've learned, that it's such an overwhelming experience that sometimes talking about it more isn't really what you need, or like more I don't know how to say this besides like sometimes giving people money is like, I think one of the best things that you can do to support them, because for me at that time, I mean, my whole livelihood was built around my physical capabilities. Yeah. And so to have people give me money to make sure that my family is like going to be good during however long it takes me to recover gave me so much peace. It truthfully did. It was just such a blanket of support where I was like, I was like, wow, this really helps. And I can't imagine having to have that financial, like that's what's crazy about an accident like this too. The financial burden is insane. Yeah. Like, thankfully I had medical insurance, but I'm not getting money from the guy that hit me.
Yeah.
At least to my understanding yet. There could be some restitution, but like you get hit by a driver that's uninsured and not in an
he wasn't even insured. Oh, wow.
Dude, you're like, if I would have gotten hit by some lady in a Range Rover whose husband owns XYZ business, like, your boy would probably be chilling right now. Like, really chilling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd probably be 30 pounds heavier with like a Mai Tai in my hand right now.
No, you'd have a bigger gym. Bigger gym.
for sure.
Yeah.
But
full floor mat.
What's crazy is like, dude, you know, you're navigating this, the hardest thing physically, mentally.
Yeah, and even now, if the insurance thing is you still have to pay your bills while that's you're hurt.
And you're getting hounded by all sorts of industries and things that you're like, is this even a real bill? I don't know. Like, does my insurance cover this? Does it not? I have to be on the phone. Like, I need to get back to work because I need to make up for lost time and I got to handle this. So that was also another thing with like the whole financial side to something like this is it can be also devastating. And so the community came together to not only show support like emotionally like that, but dude, they raised so much money for me to help bridge this gap of this year. That's just been incredible. It's just been so freaking cool, man. So
yeah
it was overwhelming to say a lot. And hopefully I spoke about that in a way that doesn't sound too weird, but I just wanted to bring it up because again, you know, people go through this stuff and it's something that's not very talked about. It's like the back end of this is an absolute mess. You know, you got to have a lot of help. Like I also had a attorney reach out to me that's been helping me a ton and is like clearing up a lot of the bills. And thankfully, like my insurance can help with stuff. But I mean, really.
Well, I'm sure your insurance company now is going to sue him. And now, not the attorney, but sue the person who didn't have anything to hit you.
Yeah, but they don't have anything though.
They usually still do. They still sue the shit out of them or try to get something. At least I have a little deepness in insurance and some of that shit. Yeah. But that's,
I don't know how it's going to go. I mean,
either way, I mean, the whole situation, it reminds me a lot of the Ken Roczen type of thing. Cause I hated Ken Roczen before he got hurt and then he got hurt and it's like, it changed his life. Like it really did. It made him rethink stuff. And I think he was on the top of the world. Right. And had a little bit of a different attitude. And then when he got hurt, he had a real understanding of like who his true friends are and different things like that and figuring out life. And like, hey, like I'm going to have to, I mean, his career was kind of over almost at that point, the way he broke his arm. Then sounds like similar what you had to do with different surgeries to get fixed and different shots or whatever it is, you know? And
yeah.
Community is a beautiful thing, man. It really is. It's crazy how cool. There's so many opportunities for us to kind of give up on humanity in today's age where people suck and I'm getting death threats in my DMs and stuff like that. And you're like, what is wrong with people? And then you see stuff like that and it sucks that it takes tragedies like whether it's your accident or the California fires that happened here a couple weeks ago. Like it sucks that it takes some extremities like that to bring people together. But man, when it does and people do come together, I mean, I kind of just got the chills right now just thinking about it. It's
a lot of people had said what you're saying, like that, you know, being at that fundraiser gives them a lot of hope. And like, you see that there's a lot of kindness in the world and it's true, man. There really is. And that's one thing I've noticed too, about my community.
You just had to get
hit
by a car for us to get that feeling.
I know it's true, but I will say, you know, that's one thing about, the Dialed fam, which is what I call my community, like anyone that's interacting on social media or paying for my product or whatever. It's like a freakishly positive community and it's not all there, to be honest. Like it's almost a good sign when I get crazy comments, like bad stuff on my Instagram. Cause then I know it's going viral. I'm like, oh yeah. I was like, this is hitting like some
real
whatever. Yeah. I was like, whatever.
If they don't hate you, then you ain't doing it right. You know?
Yeah. But like really for the most part, the community is insane. And like the DM conversations I have with people back and forth, it is wildly positive and also grounded. And not, again, not always, but I really just talk to a lot of good people who are supporting their families, who have their own personal goals, who really are trying to better themselves in a healthy way. And I really hope that going forward, I can be a better example of a more, a well-rounded, healthy lifestyle, like physically, yeah, spiritually, emotionally. I think that it's a lot easier to have these cut and dry, extreme things that you recommend to people, because those are kind of what sticks online. And it takes more thought and guidance to give people instruction that is more beneficial. And so that's one thing going forward I really want to work on. Like, I know I've been guilty in the past of having this, like, no excuses, get it done at all costs mentality. And I think that's really served me to an extent, but I almost went too far with it. And the hardest part about being a coach, like, online, is that you have to make things for the masses, but you know that some people do need a kick in the butt. Some people are being lazy, and you need to be like, hey, you actually need to step it up for your own good. But there's other people too that are working themselves to death, like literally. And you're like, dude, you need to back off a little bit. Like, this needs to get reeled in. And so it's like, how do you serve both of those things? It's definitely not easy to do, but I think I have leaned more on the example of going too hard. And I want to try and do that better in the future.
So do you, like, all great stuff there. I love that. And that is true for sure. Like, it's an interesting thing, and I know we can dive into that. So, but do you, I wanted to ask you, so, like, do you have complications for riding now from that? Like, 'cause of your hip and everything like that, like, are you still riding the same, or do you have different cleats? I don't know, you know?
Dude, no, it's, there's a lot of muscle compensation. There's, like, crazy aches and pains that I'm still going through. Like I said, the wound just closed up. So sometimes the screws are still kind of irritating my hip. But structurally, I think everything's good. I think my femur was put back at the correct angle. Like, your femur has, like, a slight bow to it. And sometimes when they put the rod, like, I have a full length tie rod through my femur. And sometimes they can put it at an angle that's not perfect. So you can end up, like, crazy bow legged or, like, internally, yeah, rotated. Like, it's not, like, the angles aren't lined up. And I think for the most part, I'm good. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things I've held on to was, like, right when I came out of all the anesthesia of, like, 2 full days of the surgeries, the surgeon came in and he looked at me, and man, I God knew that I needed this. But he's like, dude, I know this sounds crazy. He's like, but you're going to be okay. He's like, your breaks were really bad and everything that was really bad. But he's like, where the breaks were is most likely, it's a good thing. And it's most likely going to mean that you aren't going to have complications getting back on the bike. Because where I broke my pelvis was super high on my pelvis. And where I broke my femur was, like, right in the middle. And typically people start having a lot of complications getting back on the bike when they break the femoral head that's in the actual joint of the hip. And that's when it can get really problematic for, like, future stuff. For me, that didn't happen, which is cool. And I have some other issues, like, with the screws and stuff, but even pulling screws out, apparently it's not that big of a deal. But I think I'm going to be good, man. I think
you don't need a hip replacement in 2 years or anything now, or, you know.
No, that's the thing. Is, like, my hip itself is okay. It's just everything around it got blown up, you know.
Maybe you can probably thank a lot of your training and strength training for that too. I mean,
I hope so. I think there's a point where it's like no amount of bone density is going to stop a car from breaking your leg at 60 miles an hour or whatever. But at the same time, the mobility and the strength I had throughout my entire body carried me through this injury so much. I mean, I had a straight leg cast for 6 weeks, but, like, I could still put my socks on 'cause I was flexible. Like, I had a walker for 2 or 3 months, but like I could basically do dips on that thing and hold my upper body up. You know what I mean? It's like the strength, even when all this stuff wasn't working, was there to an extent. And that was another motivation too. It's like the fitness and the health that you take into an injury is kind of what you're going to rely on to carry you through it. And so that was another thing that was really reassuring. It's like, I was a believer in my own product and lifestyle before this, but like now, oh dude, I mean, even more than I ever was. And I feel like I can talk about it now without disclaimers, because even before this, it's like, yeah, you should do this, but you know, oh, it's okay. You know, you don't have to, if this or whatever, like I can just say like, dude, everybody should be strength training. I don't care if you, I don't care what kind of bike you ride. I don't care if you don't ride bikes. It's going to make your life better, and it's going to make your healthy life better. And God forbid something like this happens to you. Yeah. It will make that experience better. So, you know, that's it. It's just nice. It's nice to feel so confident in my product and actually believe in what I do so much. Like that feels really good.
Sign me up. Can you help me come lift the weights? Because I'm not like that good at it.
Yeah, but I just lift them for you.
Yeah, just lift them for me. Just transfer for that over. Yeah, I need it. I need that in my life. But yeah, so what is the future outlook from here? Are we doing another double Everest? What are we hitting here? You know, like what's the plan?
Yeah, that's been an interesting thing. I actually did I'm starting to race again and do some bigger rides. I'll be honest with you. I was just talking to my coach about this yesterday. So I actually got a riding coach.
You got a coach for a coach. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been, dude, he has helped me so much in this. There's little things like, power discrepancies, like left and right leg power. I have like dual sided power pedals. So there's all these decisions I was starting to make that were bad because I'm trying to do things perfectly. And he has helped me focus on actually what's important and not stress these small details that will be fixed over time. So it's been very beneficial. And I did a longer ride. It was like 4.5 hours of ride time on the road bike. And the last hour was kind of uncomfortable. And it was funny. It made me realize that I really don't feel like suffering yet. I think I was so uncomfortable for so long, and I still have discomforts that I didn't have before. The idea of putting myself in a position intentionally to like really be that uncomfortable for that long, it like honestly does not sound appealing. And I know it's from just this past experience, because I used to crave that, dude. Like I loved the feeling of being completely blown up from a ride. And that's why I went and did a freaking double Everest and a trail bike Everest and the Everest Rome, like all this stuff. But with that said, when after the injury, because this was the first year I didn't do an Everest in like 4 years, and it's just become this like thing.
First you haven't done in 4 years. Wow, that's a crazy stat.
And it's 3 or 4 years. Yeah. It might have been 3.5, but in 1 year I did 2. But I just did like a normal road bike.
Man,
Everest.
You must got like some demons in that closet to just do those type of things. Because like to me, I'm like, that's what everyone tells me. If I don't like to suffer anymore. I don't know. It sounds like you're same way. But like, and then Spencer would be like, you just ain't got enough demons. And there are some people will tell me that. Like that's
Dude, the double Everest, I think I had a lot to prove, to be honest, is how I felt. I had a lot to prove. And also, you know, that's one thing about building like a audience online. When 2 months out, you're like, this is literally what I did. I was like, I'm going to double Everest right here on this day. And I talk about it for 2 months. You better believe I'm not going to fail unless something wild happens. Like it was, dude, that last 8,000 feet of climbing was the hardest thing I've done. And, the hardest thing I've like, what's the word I'm looking for? Done by choice, I guess.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, yeah.
Which he did this on Deer Creek, Austin. I don't know if you know that or know of that road. So
this isn't Utah? No.
No, it's in Malibu. It's the first climb of the Nosco ride. It's a 2 mile, I forget the exact stats, but it sucks. On a day you're going up at once. It's not fun and not enjoyable, and like,
and it's really dangerous to descend at night with no.
I could imagine
you're doing it at night.
Well, it took 27 hours. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it was. So the thing is, like, I loved that, and that was the hardest thing I've ever done in, by choice. I have no intention on trying to beat that either, because it was literally that gnarly. But when I got injured, I was thinking about this like comeback, and of course, at that time, I'm thinking like, what's the most like dream scenario? No, I just came up with this this like tagline: ICU to Everest. And we've been using that hashtag throughout the year. We actually have been filming a documentary all year long and have gotten some really intense moments. And basically it's like part one, because I needed more time to do a full Everest. And so that is something that's still on my radar. Like, I would love to just do an Everest to kind of finish out the story of ICU to Everest. So I really do see it happening, but it could be a while. Like, I'm going to wait until I'm ready, and I'm not going to force myself to do it at when I truly don't feel ready to like suffer a little bit. Cause you know, it takes a lot of training. You know, I'm obviously like a lot of my fitness has come back, but I'm still not nearly as fit or fast as I was or durable. And weird stuff still kind of happening with my body. So it could be a while, but that is a goal for like a personal challenge. But the biggest focus really is getting back to the roots of being a trainer. I think this is something I've gotten away from over the years, and there's a lot of explanation behind it, which, you know, would be like a whole other podcast episode. But the reality is I have this very unique skill set from experience at a high level in bikes and a high level in the general fitness industry that not a lot of people have. And I have the opportunity to give them a product that is very useful. And for a few years, that was all I cared about. And then other opportunities presented themselves. And I think I got a little distracted. Again, not all bad. Double Everest was great for business. And it's been, and it's personally, it was like an awesome challenge thing. And there's stuff like that, that is, again, it's not all bad, but my goal is to really get back to what my real purpose is professionally, which is being a trainer specifically for cyclists and giving them the programs and the platform they need to execute them. So that's what I'm going to be focused on. That's why I rebuilt my studio. I plan on training some people in person again, literally for some community, but also as like reps as a trainer. Like,
yeah,
training people in person is different, and you learn things and you can write better programs because of it. So yeah, I'm excited, man. I really just want to be a great trainer again. And I don't see myself not being as involved as I was with cycling at all personally. But I know that like, even when I go to an event, I want to make sure the focus is on my community opposed to like my race result. You know, for example, like, I don't want to go to Unbound to see how fast I can race Unbound. Don't get me wrong, I'm still gonna do my best. I'm still gonna like go out and train my best. And like I said, I have a coach now. I'm like doing things a lot better than I did previously. But like, I want the focus to like have a dinner with the Dowd fam, or like do a group ride together, or literally get to just hang out with people that interact with all the content I put out or my product in real life, and get events like that going. So like, that's become much more important to me, is like really what my role is and where my value is for people. And I think what's nice is that my hobby of cycling and the goals that I put out myself show everybody that I'm in it with them. Like, I'm also training for Unbound. I'm also doing strength workouts. I'm also trying to ride as much as I can throughout the week and make all these progressions, you know, on my own physical side. So I think that's what's cool, is like, people know I'm in it with them. And I think if I focus on being a better trainer, it's just gonna like feed the whole machine, you know.
And this Absolutely. Is where we announce Sea Otter, you're gonna race one bike every single category they have.
Dude, I'm taking the gravel bike to slalom finals.
That's right. Wow,
that's right.
You heard it here first,
Kyle. Straight. Yeah. Make sure the course is straight.
Straight,
Kyle. Straight,
Kyle. Straight.
We'll let you start in front of the start of the gate or something. You know, give you a little. You need something. You know. No, I love it.
Oh my gosh,
that's cool. Are you going to be at Sea Otter?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I probably won't race Sea Otter. I like that's a really great one to just go full chop like industry mode.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. For me, it is. But I'm gonna be doing Levi's Grand Fondo the weekend after, which is gonna be like my first big event of the year.
Okay. Well, before we let you go, then I want to ask. Then if you're going to Sea Otter, we do a podcast. We do it live there. You down to roll through for a little bit? We'll do like a 4 hours for the day and just like roll through for a little bit. And
oh, yeah. Stop in. Yeah. And dude, that'd be a blast. Yeah. I mean, this has been super fun, guys. Thanks for having me on and letting me kind of pour my heart out a little bit. I appreciate it.
I'm glad we got you on and kind of last minute-ish and just squeeze you in and figure it out.
I'm going to need a full training program. You know, I'm making a comeback over here. I'm Austin actually with my Epic Evo. On the Epic Evo. Cool, man. I appreciate it.
I have one last question.
You got one? All right.
Yeah, because I remember I was on episode 100 of the Dialed Health podcast, I believe, years ago.
I think it was 100, yeah.
Yeah, I'm 90% sure it was 100. And one thing that you asked me that I kind of chuckled at the time, because I still don't necessarily have the answer because I just do what I love and that's that. But you asked me how to make a viral video. And I feel like you've watched that or you've understood how to do that now and have found a lot of success on social media since for the last couple of years or whatever. So could you talk about how you kind of figured out to make this educational platform on social media and how you looked at the analytics of what you were doing and turned it into this, what seems like a
give away the secret sauce, dude, right here, right now.
Yeah, dude, that's crazy. You bring that up. So I want to say that you had mentioned plugging a formula. I know that talking to Sebastian, normal mountain biker, he had told me this. It was a couple years ago too, but he's like, dude, it's about finding like a rhythm and a formula to your reels at the time. Like basically reels is when I really started attempting to do successful content and like looking at analytics to like help guide it. And he was the first one who's like, dude, it's like a formula. And I'm like, I still don't really know like what he means by like a formula. But it's funny, if you scroll through my feed, like you go deep a couple years ago, you'll see there was like a couple months where I was trying like a lot of random stuff. Yeah, really random.
I remember. I watch. I pay attention.
Yeah. Like from just the most obnoxious kettlebell flows to just more like, I don't know, kind of like you're just trying to get people's attention. There was just like random stuff I was trying to do to get people's attention. But basically, I put out a reels for back pain specifically. And I got the format from the general fitness industry where basically it was like problem and then solution.
Yep.
And so I opened the video by like showing, like it was very kind of like over the top, you know, and I'll still do this. It's kind of goofy, but also I will say if you're someone who wants to be successful online, I'm not saying you have to compromise any of your morals, but you have to be willing to maybe do things that feel like, okay, is this a little too goofy? Or I feel like I'm putting myself out there for criticism. I'm just throwing it out there. You got to let that go. To sort of try and find things. But I opened it with a shot like, I have back pain. I'm on a bike. I stop. I look uncomfortable. And the whole thing is like,
I've seen this video. Back pain.
It's called
I've made a lot of them since.
It's called
a
hook.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And so that's the problem. Solution is
XYZ.
Off the bike strength training, which is exactly the product I provide. Yep. And exactly the thing that you would really want to do to fix it, most likely, anyways. And so basically, I realized that it speaks perfectly to my audience because my audience are bike riders. Yep. You know, I don't have very many people from the general like health and wellness. I do have some crossover, definitely more than a lot of cyclists online. But for a lot of people, I'm their like main resource for health and fitness, opposed to all the bike stuff that's in their feed. And so I knew I have bike riders. I knew that they're expecting to find some type of strength conditioning thing from me. So then when I speak to them directly with a problem that they have, which is back pain, and I give them a solution, they start saving it and engaging it with it. And then I realized, like, oh, people, you know, cyclists want to have stronger sprints. Cyclists want to fix their knee pain. Cyclists want a core workout. And I can still plug the same exact format. And once you get something that's successful like that, you got to basically give them the same but different. Like,
yeah, you gotta lean into
it can't be so similar that people are like, I just saw that. But it also can't, I'm not saying it can't be so different. Like that, when we opened, I told you I was starting to try a lot of new styles of content. And it's taken me a while to figure out things that are working and how they basically interact with like the engagement. Like, for example, sometimes, like, I just posted this commentary video about trap bars versus barbells. It's like a minute and a half, and it's like a commentary video. It's not something I expect to go viral, but the whole purpose of the video is to add depth to my page so that when they see a core workout that goes viral, they go to the page and then they see a video of me actually coaching, and they're like, the goal is that they see, they realize I'm a more credible source than like a fitness influencer that's just putting out viral videos. But I also know that I can't just keep posting those commentary videos or it's going to kill my engagement over time. So like, I have to take that viral video and like pace it throughout trying new things as well. So it's like, I can do a photo scroll that helps my audience get to know me and makes them feel more connected to me, like a BTS type thing. But then I need a viral video to bring new people in. But then the next one can have some depth and show people that I'm a real coach. And it's like these little, like, basically what I'm saying is you get the viral format and not everything has to be posted with a goal of being viral. But when it comes to that style of video, there is that formula. For me, it's like problem solution. And I think the benefit I have and what you can leverage is trying to figure out what engagement people are doing most often on those viral videos. What's boosting the algorithm for you? Is it likes? Is it just views? Is it comments? Is it people DMing it to other people? I'll tell you, for fitness people and a lot of fitness stuff like this, it's bookmarks. I get more bookmarks on my post than likes.
That's crazy huge analytic. But it, in terms of like social media, Instagram, like analytics that Instagram's algorithm looks at, is the number one most important shares. Engagement is saves first. Shares is number two, comments is three, and likes is the least important of the of the four pieces of.
What about just views? Do you know about just views? Is that more than likes?
Lowest.
That's the lowest.
No. Yeah. They want to see people that engage with the views. Because somebody could watch. I think most people watch stuff and don't engage with things, and that doesn't necessarily keep.
I think that's like part of the user like habits or whatever. Is like, I just feel like less people like things now because they just don't care.
Yeah,
or something.
I think view time's in there. Like, if you can get someone to engage in a carousel post that's long enough, and then if they're sharing it, I don't think it has to do if they're watching just your video, but if they've watched it 600 times in like a 10-minute span or something, like they keep watching a crash and a guy, boom, and watch, and I'm just going to sit here, show all my friends. Yeah. I know they calculate that in with the shares and everything like that.
For sure, because at the end of the day, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook,
they need you to sit there and stay there. Yeah.
Their whole goal is to keep you on the app. So the longer you can get people to stay on the app.
I mean, we can go down this rabbit hole huge. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess, you know, did you give Sebastian, is Sebastian on the training program? Like, is he signed up for the Dialed Health now?
Dude, we've kind of talked about doing like some funny collab. Because I feel like there's something there that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I just don't know what it would be.
Day
but
one
he's
to day 50,
awesome.
The difference. Yeah.
Well, he's a creative genius. He can figure something out. You guys should.
Did you see the thing like the other day where he had like has a car in one hand? He's like, if you drive this type of car,
yeah, you're this
type of like biking. Oh, that was so genius. Yeah, yeah, it was on point.
Yeah, yeah. No, awesome. We love Sebastian. Yeah. Dude, no, I appreciate you coming on. You said you've used Riverside, so I'm downloading your, it's 37%. We're going to kick you off, finish up talking some crap on Red Bull Hardline and stuff like that. Don't close the browser. That's what I got to ask you.
Cool.
Yeah, if you can. So it'll download to us. I appreciate your time and coming on, and dude, wild story. Wild.
Yeah. Thanks for the outlet. It's awesome to chat with you guys, and really makes me miss hanging out at enduro races, Spencer. So,
we're gonna hang out at Sea Otter. So.
Sea Otter, dude.
Yeah, hey, let's for sure do that. That'd be really cool to sit down with you guys there and chat live.
Yes, we want it. Yeah,
yeah. Enjoy it. Enjoy talking about Hardline, dude. I gotta say.
Oh, you want to dig into it with us?
Well, no, I actually gotta go. I gotta get a haircut.
Okay,
but
we get it.
I do want to give my two cents. First off, the whole Jackson Goldstone comeback story is pretty wild.
Sick.
I mean, the fact also that he took Troy's line from watching the live feed on that like inside or whatever.
Insane.
On the berms. I'm sure you guys talk about it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's like some Sam Hill in his heyday stuff.
Yep.
But I mean, the line was there. Do it. Right. Like,
yeah.
The count. I mean, we were going to talk about like, is that cheating or not cheating? I mean, I think it's a good line. Right. Are we talking about where he jumped the berm? Am I seeing something?
Yeah, jumped the berm. I don't think he's like outside.
No, that's
okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I didn't know if you can count it as that. Yeah, sorry,
dude.
I look at things.
It was so sick to see.
Wild.
Is that all I was gonna say about it?
Well, I got a question. All right, ask. All right. So my feeling. Okay. The Red Bull Hardline.
Better push that haircut.
Okay. Yeah, the original Red Bull Hardline. You know, in UK with the brother and the sister, I forget their
Athertons.
Name, like Atherton's, yes, and I've been there. That seems like a way gnarlier course. This course doesn't seem like that. Is this really considered Red Bull Hardline?
It doesn't matter. It's different.
Well, I think, I want to say there was a rider there that got asked, like, will you go ride the one in Wales? And they're like, no, that's still too gnarly. I think that's pretty agreed upon that it's like harder.
So does this one need a different name? I guess is what I'm saying. Like, I don't know if it's, should be called it, right? No,
it's just I think they're just trying to expand the like avenue of what Hardline is, and I don't think it has to necessarily be the most insane technical features. I mean, some of those jumps were insanely big.
I mean, they're
on
huge,
that one. But and they're hauling, dude. Like that corridor that the drone chased them in, that was like a pump track kind of. They are ripping, dude. And I mean,
dude,
it's just a different type of Hardline.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like you're being a tough critic. That track
I am
is
a little
insane.
Bit. Because the Wales one is gnarly. Like,
I just think
they can't even walk the Wales one.
Yeah. I will say, like, the rock stuff that they have and, like, the speed they're hitting some of those rocks, like, oh, dude, it's so sick. But I feel like the terrain, I feel like you're going to get World Cup tracks that can provide harder rock gardens.
Yeah.
But also, you're not going to see, like, those jumps in a World Cup track, I don't think.
No.
If they did, it'd probably be even more successful. Maybe they'll take a note out of that book, dude, because obviously a lot of World Cup men and women showed up and could ride that track.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was crazy to see Sam Hill actually riding that. That was
sick, dude.
But it was so fun to watch. And I will say that POV from Jackson Goldstone was like,
dude,
I was like, this might be one of the gnarliest POVs I've seen. But it's just the speed now is unbelievable. Like, did you guys see Ronan Dunn's POV from like the New Zealand national champs or whatever that was?
Yeah.
It's just, sick. I don't even get it. Anyways, I'll let you guys chat. I got to roll.
Yeah.
But,
get your haircut. Yeah.
It's so fun to watch, dude.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I appreciate you coming on,
dude. Right. Do you want me to leave it?
Just leave it button? Going. I'll hit the remove button. Let's see if it works. I mean, yeah. All right, go for this.
Thanks, dude.
I can hit the button that says leave.
Yeah. Yeah, it's booting. All right. I got you. All right, there we go.
Oh, later.
Dude.
Yeah.
Wild. Dude, I didn't know that. It's like every time we have someone. Okay, people understand that I always ask Spencer to get people on. Like all the time, and he drops the ball. Don't get it wrong. I love this guy. He's laughing over there. I'm glad he can finally admit it. He drops the ball all the time. But I find these people, and I have them come on, right? And
And to find out, I don't even know that Spencer had this long of knowing the people when they come on. So it's kind of wild that I didn't, what was the first TDS? I mean, that's some old school shit. Like, how do you got a history, bro? That's all I'm saying, dude. You're getting old. It's over, dude.
Yeah, I'm an old timer, man.
You're 30 now. It's over, dude.
Oh, that's shoot, all we're saying, man. You know?
yeah, but Hardline, I know I am being a little crude. I would not be able to ride that track. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, being at Wales, I was at the first one. There, shot it. Dude, that fucking thing was gnarly. And this one just didn't. I mean, it had the big jumps, but I was like, I don't know. It kind of felt like it, I don't know, like it needed a different name. That's all I'm saying, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I don't really care. Hardline, Tasmania, it's Tasmania, right? Yeah.
Is it Tasmania? Okay.
Yeah. Regardless, like, I don't care. It's more good racing with good coverage that a lot of people go to. Red Bull is carrying Action Sports, and having something that they can televise in their way is great, with the right commentators that people want to listen to and stuff. Like, I don't care what it's called. It's gnarly. It's sick. Those jumps are huge. I do agree that it's not as technically insane as Hardline in Wales, but that's fine. I think that doesn't have to be. That terrain is only in Wales, really. I mean, there's gnarly stuff like Rampage and things like that, but whatever. Who cares?
I guess I was like, if you did another Rampage somewhere else and it wasn't as gnarly as that, is it fair to call it Rampage? Yeah, that's my point. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I think just as a business though, it's easier to build off of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had gotten told a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, that they were branching out on Hardline, and they've looked at multiple locations, like, you know, Aaron Glenn's new place and things like that.
Which to try to piggyback a Rampage, which I know that they have tried.
Oh, really?
And have tried to look for venues that offer similar things, and they just can't
find stuff like that, though.
Exactly. That's why they didn't go with like a Rampage build off.
Yeah.
But man, yeah. What Derek was saying about Jackson taking
pretty
that
unreal,
line,
right? That's pretty sick.
Just watching it on footage and then just trying it and making it work was insane. And then Asa being as close as he was with like not a good run. I mean, obviously it was great. Obviously he's hauling, but like he made a lot of mistakes and he didn't hit that line. The first like rock drop that he like slid off of was gnarly.
So
and he still clawed back like 2 seconds.
Where do you
in
think
the bottom
it
half of that
come?
Descent?
Like, are we looking at a pretty new what's it? Yeah, what are we looking
sick
at right there?
And future's years bright.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. It's brighter just than like these ring lights, you know, in my face.
Hey, but dude, all right, I do have a bone to pick with these guys that have the sickest Fox kits.
Yeah.
And you can't get them. Like what?
That's not marketing.
Oh, I know, but dude, some of those kits are lit. Like I want,
exactly.
I want
that's
them.
Why. I think that's why.
But, yeah, I know that's why. But
people
I just
want
don't
what
like
they
it
can't have. Always.
I get it.
As
I
soon
feel
as
like
it's available to the public, it won't sell. Honestly, probably, truthfully, all that stuff. Like even in the motocross industry, I mean, I've known from my dad's business and stuff. Everyone says online that they want these crazy wild colors, and then it gets in stock, and then it sits.
Yeah.
Sure, they sell a few of them. Or
like the three major colors that sell is like white, black, red, and blue, right? Yeah, like you can just have solids.
That's
four. So three. Did I say three? I said the major colors. Did I say three? I said three.
Said
sorry.
Three.
Yeah. All right. Math is strong. All right. Another topic I do want to talk about is analog bike sales. Have you heard much rumbling within the industry that they are done with analog, basically?
I mean, I haven't heard that they're done with analog.
Well, but they are researching to no longer, and this is an interesting topic. I think it could go into another deeper one, but just scouring it a little bit. I've talked to multiple manufacturers and them just talking about, hey, our analog bike sales are in the shitter. Unless it's a sick ass XC bike or an e-bike, it doesn't sell in the category of gravel and things like that. But I'm just saying.
Yeah. I think that the industry is just in a rough spot, and it's really not. From a numbers perspective, I don't think it's in that bad of a spot. I think we're just still in the
We're coming off the COVID years where it was just insane.
And so many people bought bikes. And there's hasn't been that many technological advances to really
warrant give going people, and getting
a, a fresh bike. And in the e-bike market, there have been a lot more changes.
There's a lot of growth.
Yeah, there's the new Trek and the new Cannondale, whatever. All these CommonSol came out with an e-bike for CommonSol lovers. Like, there's all these new e-bikes, new motors are getting lighter. It's changing.
Bigger batteries, yeah.
It's changing dramatically, whereas a trail bike from 1 year to the next, like, it's tough to really bring in a big jump in bikes. And I think that's kind of why there's been a slow, and the world's in kind of this weird flux right now and has been.
If you're going to buy something, you're going to not just buy a newer looking model, right?
If all these bike brands have these massive discounts on last year's model, most people why would I buy the new when I could buy the old for $2,500? And you're like, that is a sick build for $2,500.
It is true, man. It is very true.
It's tough. And I think that, overpurchasing was a big problem. Because people
look at Facebook Marketplace
things.
Now.
Bikes are.
It's an interesting topic. I just thought, like, we can definitely bring it up in other times, and we have more time to dig into some of that stuff. But interesting, just to think that there could be an extinction of analog bikes in the future.
I don't think they're ever going to go fully away. They're not. They can't. But e-bikes are going to be more and more of the future for sure. But
yeah.
Right. I don't think analog bikes will completely go away ever.
Pretty wild that we literally were talking about fire and forest, or they're working on cleaning shit up, and then one day later we all light on fire here.
We jinxed it, I guess.
I mean, that's honestly like it's been crazy. The podcast I was saying 2 a month, I had 10 to 15 days of no power where I'm at. Spencer, I don't think you dealt with too much of the power because you're in a newer development. I think it's underground, but where I'm at, we went through that, the crazy winds. And I mean, there was a moment that one was kind of creeping up on us. I know you had one kind of creep up on you almost, if it would have jumped the freeway. And apologize being a little late on this one and getting stuff, but I think we're getting,
and
back
I lagged.
Well, we don't want to, I mean, we can go into that.
And then one other thing that I kind of want to just touch on really quickly is the rumors that I've been hearing of a new wheel size coming.
Oh, wow. We're going into 32.
Yeah. I mean, at least just chew on it a little bit here for a second. Like, there's been rumors.
I'm pissed because, dude, I literally have a bunch of 29er tires saved up and ready to go. Now if this 32 comes out, I got to sell my shit.
What are we thinking? Do people you're going straight to it?
I don't know. What do you think? I
don't know. I feel like it's going to be a little bit of the 27.5 movement. It's if it comes.
Do I have to resize my van for how I load bikes in now? Because the wheel chucks.
The rumor is that there will be 32-inch wheeled bicycles in the future that are coming.
I can confirm or deny. Okay, how about this? I have texted a prominent person that manufactures tires with inside the industry. They said, in April time, we will have a podcast with them because they want to wait till then to talk about something extraordinarily new. And I doubt that it's just a new tread pattern.
Yeah.
How about that? That's
exactly. And I've heard this from a few different places, and yeah, it's interesting. It's crazy. I mean, it's gonna be the thing, just like the 29er was at first, just like the 27.5 was at first. Everyone's gonna be like, "What? This is crazy. This is stupid. Why would you ever do this?" And then maybe it slowly catches on. 32 is a big wheel.
Okay, so
man.
I wasn't around from the 26 to the 27 to the 29. I was barely
29, then to 27.5.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. So I was barely when the 27.5, and it was like fatter ones. Kind of thing was, that's when I kind of got more into this industry. What were you? Were you on, not on, on board? What were we?
Yeah, I came right in. I started racing. My first bike was, my first bike was a 26 inch, actually, 26 inch Cannondale. But I came in literally right as the 29er was coming out, and I was too green to really know. I hopped, my next bike was a 29er, and every bike since then, other than one or two, have been 29ers.
So you didn't really have much of like a
an opinion.
Up. Yeah.
And then the 27.5 came, and I think a lot of people were like, what the heck? Like, why do we want to go back to smaller? We already realized that doesn't work. And people were trying to find the balance of what's the right wheel size. Because 29er felt too big. It had better rolling, but it was tougher to turn. A lot of smaller riders were having them super hard time going 27.5 or going 29er. So they put this 27 bike in, and 27.5 bikes are fun. They really are. And they are super maneuverable. And, that kind of became a thing, and then it faded. Now it's almost gone. Yeah. The only 27.5 wheel that is really made in, a big amount is the rear wheel on downhill bikes and e-bikes and some other trail bikes.
32 front, 29 rear now.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe 27.5 rear, 32 front. I don't know. But yeah, I think that it'll be weird. People don't like change, and I think that it'll be a bit of a pushback at first. Who knows? Maybe it works. I mean, that also could be our industry trying to sell more bikes, and
we need to
find something to sell them on, and a new wheel size could be a big enough change. So
yeah, I mean, I'm with you on it. I don't really care. I just ride a bike. I love it. If it feels good and I like it, I fucking put the stamp on it. I'm not as good as you, so, you know.
I just ride.
I know. You're fucking crazy, dude.
Some guy.
People don't understand, dude, like the talent you have, you know, and if you were just on a Derek Teal fucking training program, you know, you would, Nino would just fucking retire, you know?
I don't know. I don't go that far, but I will say that Colton Peterson, who's been on this pod before.
Yeah. Colby.
And I did a little video. Just, he followed me down a local trail and we were hauling ass and it was super fun. And, we got a comment on there that's like, hey, can I get your guys a setup since we're both running the Stumpy 15 and Colton puts all his suspension pressures, tire pressures, whatever. And I literally just responded. I was like, I got no idea. I just, I haven't checked my suspension in weeks.
We
tire pressure. We
fight about this because
I went, all right, feels good. Tread is just worn. I need new tires, but I just gotta run it.
This is why I don't like riding with you, because I'm like, dude, I'm over here getting the air pressure just right, getting my suspension just right, and then I just get my doors blown the fuck off by you on a mountain bike. It's just,
it's all preference,
dude,
though.
Like, it could be flat tires and you're ripping through past me, you know? It's crazy.
I got Aiden Chapin, or I don't know, some friends that just run like 22 PSI in their tires. I could never run that low.
No way,
and then
that
I got
wild.
Bubba Warren that's like 34, 35 PSI. And that seems too hard. And both ends of that spectrum, people that ride that, rip. Bubba's such a good rider. Aiden, whoever, such good rider. I don't know. You just figure it out. You get comfortable with whatever you're on. And
yeah, I like
make it.
Make
it work.
All right. So, yeah, we have more coming. And that's why we haven't probably dug too deep into the tire thing. I've heard it years ago, and then it was on a podcast. I'm so sorry. I don't remember the name of it, because they deserve the credit, because they really did talk about Trek and someone from Trek testing the 32s, I remember. And they tested all types of sizes. I guess they said like a 39, a 34, and a 32. I can't remember, or something like that. Have you heard that podcast or no? Have you heard about this? No. Okay.
I don't want to blow anybody out.
Yeah, so I had heard something about this, and yeah, but I'm trying to compile originally sparked this is I wanted to do a tire podcast super deep into just, you know, treads to compounds and different reactions and things like that, and then now the spark of the 32. So we're gonna have to wait to April, I guess.
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll have something. Hopefully we have an in-depth one on that. Last but not least, unless Spencer has some more, US Cup mountain bike, we are live streaming that sucker. Yeah, and I'm talking 3 days of coverage, March 7th, 8th, and 9th. Be free on YouTube. Spencer's coming in.
gonna be one of your show hosts for the day. Yeah, look at this guy.
I can commentate.
Calling the races. Yeah, I mean, dude, getting back to little XC roots for you there. Maybe you hop out on the Epic Evo, get a hot lap fan. What do we got?
We're going to do live stream. I'm going to be on a bike being like, all right, fam, we got Chris Blevins leading the race.
Could you imagine?
And here comes, and I'm sprinting next to him with a camera. That'd be hilarious. Like Tour de France style.
I would love that. I would love it.
That'd be so funny.
Yeah, just we'll do a section, and you have to sprint to beat him in it, you know?
I'm screwed. I don't know why you guys want me to commentate.
Dude, because
I don't even know what I'm going to be able to say. I'm going to be
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Ricky Carmichael.
Nah, dude. Ralph Shaheen. Good. Ralph Shaheen was a nice guy.
Lee Diffie.
You don't like Lee?
No, I'm not a fan.
I know. You are crucial on that. But, dude, Lee is a – I don't know. He does. That's a tough position at that level.
Our live thing is not
at that level.
I'm not going to be on his level. That's for sure. But I'm just saying I'm not going to.
Well, we're expecting a lot from you. So if you want to tune in, watch it. I mean, we're talking almost, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours of coverage each of those days. And we're not just doing the pros. We're going to have amateurs and things like that. And the competition to beat Spencer in a wheelie, nose wheelie, something like that, live on the stream.
Sick.
Yeah. Yeah, you in?
Yeah, let's go. Sounds
sweet. Okay, that's what I got. And then we're working on Sea Otter for the, obviously you kind of heard it, podcast live. So if you're going to Sea Otter and you want to just be in the background of the fans and just cheer it up, bring us beer. Yeah, I mean, bring me beer because I don't know if Spencer's drinking or maybe he is having one. I don't know. Program tight, loose. Where are we at?
We'll see when we get there. We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Do we have anything else?
Thanks for listening, folks.
That's right. Check us out on YouTube. You can watch it. You can also watch us on Spotify and listen
all
on
show.
Yeah, podcast. what? Apple podcast. And our website. You know, I've redid it. So you can definitely listen and watch into stuff on there. InsiderMTB.com. I think I've hit all of it, dude. Instagram, which thank you for all the new follows. That thing spiked up pretty good. And Spencer's got the double deuces.
I'm just saying bye. Let's go.
Later.